We're back live from Circa's Galaxy Ballroom in Las Vegas.
We are indeed back. Sorry about that. We lost the internet because, well, that's technology sometimes. This is Raheem Ann Harris on 670 The Score, and we just wrapped up talking about, unfortunately, we had some pretty good steam and momentum when it came to being excited about the Cubs' win last night. The most important part is not only did Marshall collect the dollars that we owed him, but other people gave him money as well. So you've got that going for you. In Vegas, we call that house money. You
know? Robbie says he's going to fax me the dollar. Don't do that, Robbie. I'll take that dollar in person when I see you next.
You're getting the dirty dollar that Layla gave me.
Oh, you know what? I appreciate that because that's the dirty dollar I'm going to give her whenever the White Sox decide they do want to get over 46 and a half wins.
Made money is clean money, in my opinion.
Okay, that's fair as well.
We wanted to also tease this, but now we're here because of technology. So we got advanced copies of the Seth Wickersham book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, the famous book that detailed not only Caleb Williams and his dad, Carl, talking about whether or not he wanted to be a Bear, but it also goes into the vignettes and backgrounds of other quarterbacks that came on long before him, like John Elway, Peyton Manning, his dad, and this is also referred to a lot, Archie Manning. Warren Moon's story is reflected in this book. There's a lot to digest. We only got it a few days ago, so between trying to prepare for our shows and also do the right thing with acknowledging the current Bears, we wanted to sit down with this, and plain reading was a part of this for me. The way the stories are told is in a series of vignettes by Wickersham. He goes into not just recollections of stories that others had, but also then puts them next to current storylines that you are seeing take place in real time. So the storytelling is some in the past, and then it's some scene change to what is going on in real time with people. That includes Carl Williams and Caleb Williams, who, according to reports, they did both make sure that there was an integrity check with the author, Seth Wickersham, and that it was being portrayed in a proper and integrity-filled light.
No, I think the process, and you know, we talked to Seth Wickersham when we first learned this book was coming out because of the ESPN article, which highlighted some of the things that Caleb Williams was going through as a Chicago Bear. I like the process there. The vignette format of the book was interesting. It reminded me of watching movies like Valentine's Day, Crazy Stupid Love, Love Actually, where you have different things happening with different characters and somehow they kind of connect in many ways. And that's what you see with the quarterback because, let's be honest, quarterbacks is within the fraternity of football, its own fraternity. And so to see what certain quarterbacks, former like John Elway and what Jack Elway did and Peyton Manning. And obviously you start talking about Peyton Manning, then it's Archie Manning and then it's Arch Manning and it's Cooper Manning. And there's a lot of Manning in there.
Eli,
of course. And so understanding all of that and even Caleb Williams and kind of the cross-referencing of people he came into contact with on the way to really what his stated goal was as a child, which was to be the best quarterback of all time.
And I think that there's a part of this that Wickersham tried to illustrate, but perhaps because of the storytelling style with juxtaposition doing a lot of work here because the contrast of the stories did, I think, a lot of the painting of the actual positions people were in. Like, for example, we all know that the Mannings are made men, not just in football, but in American society. We know that John Elway rose to the top, not only defying process, but then also being part of ownership in larger groups of the Denver Broncos, more important parts of the team. You know, that was the goal. Roger Staubach is referenced in this because after he was the Cowboys quarterback, he proceeded to run a commercial real estate business that became a true empire. So that part of it was illustrated, I think, really well. But the other side of it is the Carl Williams and Caleb Williams arcs and illustrations of what they were going through, where at times I feel like they were unfairly portrayed in perhaps the motivation. And at times I thought perhaps almost painted in a way of delusion when it came to the drive. But that's because, as a lot of us know, when you're not the guy who looks like Peyton Manning, or you're not the quarterback who looks like, per se, Eli Manning, or in this case, John Elway, that you have to work twice as hard. You have to be twice as good. And it was quoted in here at times, the contrast of being a black quarterback, and that was illustrated in some of what the discussion was between Carl and Caleb and what the quotes were. You know, be good at all the things that your, quote, traditional quarterback is good at, but then also be athletic and be able to be good at essentially every role they need you to be.
And Warren Moon is one of the quarterbacks who's featured also, that there's plenty of vignettes about him in this as well. So it was interesting how that was weaved into the conversation. And I think going, if you're a Bears fan, why this book should be important to you is to understand, first of all, how you're perceived. And I've been arguing about this. One of the things that stood out, right? The nuclear option. I felt like we got a very defined definition about what the nuclear option was. It was this simple. It was, we're going to force a trade no matter what. That's what the nuclear option was, according to Carl and Caleb Williams and their planning. Carl was ready to do it, to say, if you draft us, we're not going. You're going to have to trade us. And Ryan Poles ultimately saying, we're drafting you anyway. That's the way it's going to be. And Caleb saying, I'm good with it. I'll make it work.
Now, John Greenberg again, and I think this is worth mentioning a few times, said that there was a fact-checking session with Caleb and Carl in January. And that meant that, I think, and therefore, they were going to make sure that what was said about them in the book was indeed correct. This is an embedded author. They let him into their process. And I think that's very important to note in all of this, because when what came out about the book initially, it sounded like people were reacting to investigative gotcha-style journalism, akin to what we saw Jesse Rogers report about Kyle Tucker previously. But that's not what this was. This was an invited presence, so much so that you learn about what Carl Williams and Caleb did when he was in fifth grade. When he decided at that point, when Caleb said he wanted to do this, that running back wasn't going to be his fate, that it became clean food, you know, no more fast food when you're in fifth grade, what he had to do, what Caleb agreed to do with his dad to try to make this work. One of the quotes in here says, word about Carl Williams had started to spread in NFL circles, that he was a combination of Marv Marinovich, the poster boy for out-of-control quarterback dads, that he was Jack Elway or Archie Manning, only with a less talented son. And that right there tells me why he felt the need to work so hard. So once you read this book in September, keep that in mind. Keep that in mind, that perception is there no matter what you do out of the gate.
Strong, strong comparison that I got while reading this was remembering the interview, I don't know if you remember this, Layla, that Venus Williams did at a young age, mm-hmm. where Richard Williams, her father, her tennis coach, had to stop the interview because she had answered a question. And the interviewer was basically like, well, why do you think you can do this? He's like, she already answered you, bro. Like, why are you trying to get an answer out of a child to suit what narrative you're trying to create? You're not going to sit here and berate my child when I've given her a certain level of confidence. And we all know what happened with Venus Williams and her younger sister Serena. And that would not have been possible without a certain installation of self-confidence and self-worth that a lot of athletes don't have, because their parents are the ones turning them over to coaches as opposed to keeping them on the straight and narrow themselves. And that's what I feel like Carl Williams was doing with Caleb Williams. The one story that illustrates that the best is when Carl Williams, in this book, goes to wake up Caleb Williams for an early morning workout. And Caleb Williams is like, and Carl.
Like 4 a.m., right?
Yes.
Not your time of 5 a.m.
No,
was even earlier than that.
And Carl Williams said he thought that Caleb thought he was going to, you know, rip the sheets off the bed and say, get up, it's time to go. He didn't do that. He just turned around, started walking out the room, and that was motivation enough for Caleb to be like, I guess it is me. I'm going to have to motivate myself to get up out of this bed and do the work that has to be done to reach this goal of being the best quarterback of all time.
But the reason I don't blame parents like Serena and Venus's dad, like Carl Williams, for example, and also like LeVar Ball, is because they know what has happened to them and people they know, and they knew that nobody, in the words of Notre Dame, nobody was going to outwork us today. And so that's what you see. And I think the difference is Yeah, that's a quote in this book about the word about Carl Williams. But Caleb was a willing participant in this. He told his dad he needed more. He told his dad he wanted to keep pushing himself. And I think Carl is right when it comes to the CBA and how it forces quarterbacks to play in certain ways and how the new CBA is particularly stringent and without loopholes, as we've seen, when it comes to player freedom and what was going to go on. I don't think he's wrong in that at all. But when you read this book, there are also points here that were made, similar to the articles that have come out, about how there was very much a purposeful process to not play in Chicago. Like, you need to understand that part of it, too. And I think it's, when I was reading it, I kept thinking to myself, is this because you would feel like all the work that you did would go down the drain because of timing of who had the first overall pick?
Your life's work at this point. We're talking about American Kings, a biography of the quarterback by author Seth Wickersham of ESPN. He's the ESPN senior writer, and it's a phenomenal job of taking years of work here and putting it together for this book, which I think is a revealing look behind the scenes at the quarterback position. And I want to give the framing that Seth Wickersham, in the beginning of this book, talks about how he wanted to be a quarterback and how his quarterback dream ended when his junior year, he was not going to be the backup quarterback on varsity. Instead, they said, you know, you guys over here on varsity, you guys on JV. They read his name. They pointed to the JV side. He becomes a receiver. That's the end of his story as a quarterback. But he has this certain just the way he levitates the quarterback position above all other things in sports and what that means, not only on the field, but in life, to be a quarterback, whether it's in high school, college, the NFL. And that's the framing through which this story is told.
Well, yeah, I mean, you even see it in the title, American Kings. Typically, there's only one, you know that, per country? But I think that that was a clever way of putting it and also very correct to what you're seeing. Some of the other highlights in this that I think are important was that a lot of people had the visual of Caleb Williams crying on the sideline at USC. Well, here it says Trivers knew that cry, Trivers being his previous coach in high school. Caleb always cried. Cried after wins, definitely after losses. That changes the discussion, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Trivers is the guy, Randy Trivers, the head coach at Gonzaga College High School at the time, was the one who started Caleb Williams as a freshman in high school when he knew he was going to get a lot of the blame if things did not go well. And until he completed a big Hail Mary in the city championship game, things weren't necessarily going well for Caleb Williams.
Now, there's a lot of other parts of this, too, that I think are very interesting. We're just touching on the Caleb Williams parts. This is Raheem Ian Harris on 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the ballroom here at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Our segment, by the way, is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And as we continue to examine this book, for example, there's a lot in here about Tom Brady and Giselle and the dissolution of their relationship. And I think that that is a part of this, too, because it's set against the backdrop of also what Caleb Williams wants to do. So that kind of opens up the discussion here. There's a part where there's a conversation that's quoted between Brady and Giselle, and she says, what more do you have to prove? And then, you know, Super Bowl number 7 occurs, and then Caleb says to Carl, I want 8. Your quarterback says to his dad he wants 8 Super Bowls.
He sent him a text saying, I want 8, and Carl at first didn't even know what he was talking about. I was like, what? And then it sunk in. Oh, wait, Brady just won number 7. He's talking about 8 Super Bowls. So I understand that part. One of the interesting things about the way this all happened is the people he meets along the way, because he does play in Hollywood at USC.
Right.
And he has this dinner with Denzel Washington at Steak 48, and he shows up in sweatpants and realizes, I'm not dressed like everybody else is dressed here, starts furiously texting his dad, do I need to go home and change what's going on? And he's at the hostess stand, and Denzel calls him back to the private room, comes to get him. And I think having a conversation with Denzel Washington and the end result of that being that Denzel tells him, you're going to have to set your own sail, and that basically you're going to be alone on this journey. I think that did a lot of work in how Caleb looks at not only what he's gone through to get here, right, but also what he's going to have to do to go forward.
that part of it, I think, is really well communicated in this book. The exclusivity. And understanding that, yes, Caleb Williams hangs out with Denzel Washington at Steak 48 in L.A. Like, that's, if that doesn't put it into context. And that was really what Wickersham was trying to do. And I think a big part of this, too, also, is that my takeaway from that is that after seeing what he did on First Take, calling out the Cowboys.
Hilarious.
And then talking to Caleb, I need more Denzel Washington on football. I need it immediately.
On sports.
Just, I need him to talk more about sports all the time.
And I guess technically we are a version of talking heads to him, but like I get it. I get everything he's saying in terms of his criticisms and everything else. But I'm glad that you're getting more background on Caleb. And that's why I think Bears fans should read this book to understand the quarterback position maybe a little bit better and the variance of that position depending on who you are.
Well, and I did come away from it a lot of times thinking to myself, they're correct. Like, Carl is correct. This CBA is incredibly limiting for the players who actually make the NFL run. And he's even more vindicated, I think, when you consider the mess that has happened with the Players Association. You know, we've talked about it with Mike Florio quite a bit. I feel like he was spot on. And when that first article came out, when he's talking about tape, and that was confirmed, by the way, that was confirmed that that was a concern of Caleb's. In the fact-checking sessions, that was part of it. I feel like he was a father trying to protect his son. The problem is he's also the agent responsible for Team Caleb. But again, that is a father trying to protect his son from getting eaten up by a machine that is built on people who are not like him.
The thing I took away with it specifically with Carl,
that I can show you guys on Twitch all my bookmarks here, so you can see that. You can see all the bookmarks I have on here.
She's duly noted. I put all my notes into a document electronically, so I can
a lot more organized. But
well, I don't know if it's a lot more organized.
It's easier for me to flip.
It's organized in a different way, and I have like the page number for all my references and everything else. So I'll tell you, when you get to this book, you might want to go to page 335 because that's where it starts with this quote.
Flipping now.
We're drafting you no matter what. End quote. Bears general manager Ryan Poles told Caleb Williams. Now, see, here's why, and you get more context in this book, why that did not go over well with Carl Williams. Once you understand what the process was for Caleb deciding where he was going to play quarterback in college, and the fact that they understood that whoever I go play for quarterback in college, it's with one goal in mind. That goal is to be the number one drafted quarterback when I'm done playing in college. And to get some glory along the way, a.k.a. a Heisman Trophy. We're talking about Caleb Williams here on Raheem and Harris as we're broadcasting live from the Galaxy Ballroom here at Circa Resort and Casino, part of Football Contest Weekend. I hope you will join us tomorrow, by the way. We're going to be outside, cabana style, right? Stadium swim. I've never been. Layla talks beautifully about it, so I can't wait to get out there.
Going out there after this show.
Which will be 100-plus degree heat. But Carl Williams, the reason that they went with Lincoln Riley in college is because he had Baker Mayfield as a quarterback prior. He had other guys who had shown that they could be top of the line in college and have successful NFL careers. So to go through all these processes where you had picked a specific high school, you had picked a specific college, you had picked specific coaches to work with, who to avoid on the quarterback manufacturing circuit, over $80,000 spent in high school in trying to get your guy to be the best quarterback, a guy who was starting as a freshman at 5'9", a runt of a quarterback, but got the job done. And now all of a sudden you're told you're going to go play for a defensive-minded coach in Matt Eberflus, and nothing that Shane Waldron is doing is impressing you?
And that was part of it too. Do I want to go there? Williams told his confidants, I don't think I can do it with Waldron. Narrator. Well, he couldn't because nobody could. Carl had made it known to the Bears through third parties that he hated the hiring of Waldron, a Phillips Academy graduate who had briefly served as tight ends coach for both the Patriots during their dynastic reign and for the Los Angeles Rams. Waldron had a good reputation around the league, but Carl wanted the Bears to hire someone who was the brains behind the league's most dynamic offenses. Who does that remind you of? Not someone who had learned how to carry over a playbook. Caleb was wary, too. He asked those close to him, what do you think about the Bears? What do you think? Not just what my dad think. Bad organizations are usually bad for a reason, most replied.
So when they went out and tried to get independent thoughts on the Bears as a place for a top quarterback to land, what you're left with is that last sentence in the vignette.
But here's my question. Who wouldn't do the same?
No one.
Even if just like we heard Kyle Tucker say to the media earlier today, he thinks that he can be the one to help the Cubs today. That's how they're wired. Even if you think you can do a lot. He, Caleb Williams, is checking himself and saying, not as what my dad say, do you think I could do this? He was doing his part. And I think that that is the grace that he deserves to be given when it comes to all of the excerpts that we're seeing. Now, did he have every right to think that? Yes. Should he have addressed it, which he did? Yes. But are we going to talk about what's in here because it was fact-checked in good faith? Absolutely. More to come here from Circa's Galaxy Ballroom here in Las Vegas. We have the book, Sec Wickersham's American Kings, the biography of quarterbacks. Yes, Caleb Williams is in it a lot. He goes back all the way to Y.A. Tittle. So we will discuss some more about this coming up next. This is Rahimi and Harris live from Las Vegas on 670 The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
We're back live from Circa's Galaxy Ballroom in Las Vegas. Here are your hosts, Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris.
Yes, indeed. We are live from the Circa Resort and Casino Galaxy Ballroom. We are here for football contest weekend. We are also getting you ready for Cubs baseball here on 670 The Score. It is the series finale between the Brewers and the Cubs from Wrigley Field. First pitch at 1:20. Bruce Levine helping us out, able to get us information and audio from Kyle Tucker, who is back in the lineup today. He spoke before the game. If you missed it, you can go back and listen on the Rewind app.
You want to go do that.
He is batting in the lineup second, facing Quinn Priester and the Brewers as the Cubs try to take 4-5 against Milwaukee.
With Shota Imanaga on the bump.
And in the meantime, we got advanced copies of the Seth Wickersham book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, where he goes into 400 pages worth of stories going back to, I mentioned earlier, Y.A. Tittle, John Elway, the Manning family, all illustrated in depth here. Even Tom Brady, even Giselle, Sean Payton is quoted a lot as well. And yes, the storyline of the efforts of Carl and Caleb Williams to not only be the first overall pick in the draft, but to succeed in high school, to succeed at USC, to go to Oklahoma and follow Lincoln Riley, all of that illustrated and, as John Greenberg originally reported, fact-checked back in January. And we were talking about some of our biggest takeaways in this, and we don't have a lot of time left, and I know a lot of people have a lot of questions. We're already seeing people say they want to pre-order the book, and we're not trying to sell it, but we are here to help give some context. What were some other aspects that I think you wanted to touch on? Because I feel like I did a lot of what I noticed first.
Layla, let's go to page 318 of today's required reading. And I want to talk about this. So
I have that bookmark.
First, the notion that every time there's a quarterback that is being mentioned as a possible number one overall pick, which seems like it's becoming more and more common, not like once every couple of years or two out of 3 years, but now it's like almost an every year thing, the way the quarterback position in the NFL. There's a certain foil level to it. And Caleb Williams had Drake May as his designated foil, as the guy with
his nemesis.
His nemesis, right? Before Jaden Daniels really burst onto the picture by actually winning the Heisman, that's who he was compared to a lot of the times. So we get to the combine.
Drake May, you say, after all of what we talked about in the last segment, kind of the point we're trying to make here, too.
They say Drake May went by the book, according to Wickersham. He signed with Creative Artists Agency. That's a big agency. He met with the press. Unlike with Williams, where there was no question about whether he would play for the team to draft him, not only was there doubt over whether Williams would sign with the Bears, we didn't know if he would show up in Indianapolis, let alone, you know, throw for the scouts. But he did show up, and when he showed up, that's when, like, the legend of Carl Williams kind of took off, according to this, because he was meeting with many agents, Carl was. He had waited for years for this moment. That's the words of Seth Wickersham, telling many of those agents, quote, I don't want my son playing for the Bears, end quote. And so what were Williams' options? This is where they started about playing for the Upstart United Football League. Or, and then they could re-enter the draft. Or sign for the league minimum and then try to be cut after a year. That's crazy. And then it was like, well, maybe we could, I don't know, go back to college. But the problem is if you go back to college, now you're delaying that second contract in the NFL. And that's the problem because you sign the four-year with a team fifth-year option as a first-round pick. And then if you don't like the team you're with, either they've hurt your value or three straight years of being franchised. And then you're 30 years old before you get your second contract.
What did we say yesterday? That Tyson Bagent is the first Bears quarterback that had been extended since Jay Cutler in 2014. That illustrates the exact point here. The second contract for the quarterback is what matters the most. This quote is, let's just read it together. Chicago's head coach, Matt Eberflus, had spent his entire 22-year coaching career on the defensive side of the ball. He had won 10 games in 2 years, and the Bears, under his direction and in an offense-friendly era, had scored 40 points in a game only once.
Can't wait for my first comfy Monday because I'm still waiting on it.
Also, I appreciate this from 262. I love Caleb, but as a top draft prospect, you almost have to know the odds are good. You're going to something I can't read on there, a blank team. And I understand that, and that's part of this. But he thought that he was going to try to do everything he possibly could. And one thing that also is worth reiterating from the reports that we've seen so far is, yes, indeed, Carl Williams talked to everybody legally he possibly could about trying to get out of being drafted first overall for his son.
Including other fathers who had been through the same situation. Q, Archie Manning, Q, Jack Elway, guys who had successfully gotten their sons to better situations in their opinions.
The haves, you know, and I think that was part of this too is that's why they were illustrated in these archetypal roles. That's why they were illustrated as being so above everything and just made men, as I said earlier. And then there's the illustration about Kevin O'Connell. Williams met with a handful of teams in Indianapolis at the Combine, his meeting with the Bears at 10:40 p.m. Wednesday. How it went depended on which side of the table you were on. The Bears saw a fine young quarterback who could handle the media market. He can. Caleb was polite and affable, but felt like the team was testing him, peppering him with questions rather than trying to form a bond. It was an awkward setting, speed dating in a stadium site. Caleb later told associates that he didn't vibe with anyone, not like he did, for instance, with the Minnesota Vikings.
Dun, dun, dun.
Williams appreciated how Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings head coach, thought about quarterbacks, how he spoke of them, his scars from having tried to be one.
Matt Eberflus wasn't a quarterback, is what you're saying?
And that's, I think, part of the illustration of the issue of how this goes back to so much more. The very basis of who you're hiring and the very basis of why organizations think certain ways. We see the end result in the games. But when you consider that part of it, what's happening backstage, how they're being talked to. You know, even when I think about Matt Eberflus saying the term complimentary football over and over again. And he's got his own system that created him too, by the way. And he succeeded in it. When you can be a head coach or a defensive coordinator in the NFL for as long as he has, that's still success. Was he a successful head coach? No. But is he better than the like, which is what this book is trying to illustrate for his respective job? Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit more about O'Connell. We discussed the book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback by Seth Wickersham. We've got advanced copies. It comes out the day after Monday Night Football in the season opener against the Vikings. So here's the background on O'Connell I think people need to understand. Wickersham writes, O'Connell was an excellent quarterback at San Diego State, a four-year captain, addicted to the wave of momentum he felt spread across the team when he did his job well. The Patriots drafted him in the third round in 2008. He figured he would watch Tom Brady up close for a few years, then take that knowledge to another team. O'Connell threw six passes as a rookie in New England,
yeah,
completing four for 23 yards. He had no idea at the time that those would be the final regular season passes of his career. He was cut the next year, 2009, the Lions signed him, then traded him 5 days later. He auditioned for teams. It never went well. He always wanted to create, quote, the wow factor, end quote, he says, the one transcendent throw that would make a team believe. Quote, I learned that's the last possible thing you should do, he says now. And so I think there was a certain relatability with his struggles that Caleb understood. And this is the part right here. The end of this particular vignette ends with this. In 2024, O'Connell was in the market for a quarterback. He got on with Williams well enough for the quarterback to fantasize about blowing up the draft and forcing a trade. Quote, "I need to go to the Vikings," end quote, Caleb told his father. Carl replied, "Let's do it."
And that's part of what we've read so far. I think that when you consider how that season turned out, and that's part of this, the results are matching the process. And when you consider how the Vikings season ended up, and Sam Darnold and Kevin O'Connell arguably now being one of the best coaches cemented in the NFL after working with him, the difference head coaches make in the league, in your wins and losses. Every time I read something else, I realize that it's even more of a difference than I understood the day before. One of the quotes that is quoted in here is Sean Payton.
Get to it.
And Sean Payton, not only do you see how he creates a team and how he works with quarterbacks, Payton has done us one better. He has a formula, and he shared it with Seth Wickersham. His formula is based on the number of attempts, the number of sacks in those attempts, the number of fumbles in that set, interceptions, your completion percentage, and then it calculates a weighted average. So he was trying to use that algorithm, a basic one, to create his value of who he was seeing to match his eye test to what he knew about their data. And for him, the lower the average, the better. Williams's was 17.5. Bo Nix's was 2.3. And that's where, as you read the Greenberg article earlier, at least you may be familiar with it, the quote came from, "I'll get criticized for taking Nix at 12, Peyton tells me of Nix. I don't give a blank. 3 years from now is what I'm worried about." And that was a big piece of it for me as well, was understanding not only those pieces, but then Sean Payton talking about how the NFL is about confusion. It's not just execution, it's confusion. I hope that you are tired of listening to the story about Ed Reed mirroring Peyton Manning, so much so to the point where the extra move of him faking out the faking out of the faking out,
it's too many layers,
is what caused catastrophic failure for that drive. Bill Belichick talks about it effusively for a reason. I feel like it was a sea change moment in the NFL where that is literally changing the game, what he did. And it was that point where you realize not only are you mocking up the details, you're mocking up the end result of this five times and figuring out what the sixth time is, knowing that they've already gone through the five. The way that he illustrates that in this book, I think, is absolutely huge.
I love the understanding of how quarterback is played by so many different people trying to get the same end result. But it can be done in a variety of ways. Whether you're the quarterback on the field, whether you're the coach coaching the quarterback, there's more than one way to get this done. But ultimately, my biggest takeaway from this book, Layla, is that Carl and Caleb Williams wanted to reverse engineer being at Tom Brady level, really above Tom Brady level, and not in terms of the end of the career, but just where they were drafted to be in the best spot. They successfully did that almost to the point, except for the Bears. But really, if you think about it, they just had 1 year delayed from their ultimate goal, which is getting a guy who is the brains behind everything, and now the head coach, Ben Johnson, the Chicago Bears. And that's why I have a strong belief that Caleb Williams will do anything, everything to make Ben Johnson happy and to get on his level.
Right. That's what you just come away knowing him better, and you come away understanding how he got to this position better. And that is always important. I also want to leave you with this. And this segment, by the way, is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. The way the Caleb Williams arc ends, they paint the picture of Jaden Daniels. And they go into, Wickersham goes into what happened with Jaden Daniels. And of course, the game between the Bears and the Commanders gets brought up. Tomorrow, a building of grown-ups would look to Williams for hope. Not all of them would be in his corner. When football season arrived, the Bears started 4-2. Williams was still unsure of the Bears' operation. He liked the coaches as people, but struggled to connect with them as football minds. One of us. At times, he would watch film alone with no instruction or guidance from the coaches. "No one tells me what to watch," Caleb told his dad. "I just turn it on," end quote. The Bears' success felt fragile like it always does in the NFL, and soon it ended. In the final minutes of the seventh game against Daniels and the Commanders, Williams led the Bears 62 yards down the field, and Chicago scored a go-ahead touchdown with 31 seconds left. Ball game, it appeared. But Daniels got the ball. Washington moved to midfield, and as time expired, launched a Hail Mary down the center of the field. It was tipped and caught for a touchdown. Washington won. Daniels essentially clinched the Offensive Rookie of the Year award with that throw. When Daniels was officially given the trophy 3 months later, it seemed like a formality. The Bears, meanwhile, self-destructed. After three consecutive losses, Shane Waldron was fired. A little more than 2 weeks later, after six straight losses, including a Thanksgiving Day clock management debacle against the Vikings and Kevin O'Connell, Matt Eberflus was fired. The Bears lost four more games in a row after that. Also, there's a typo in here. That's supposed to be the Lions, as we know. The Bears lost four more games in a row after that, 10 straight in all, before beating the Green Bay Packers in the final week of the season on a Williams-led game-winning drive in the closing seconds. Williams generally played well as a rookie. He threw 20 touchdowns, only six interceptions. But the year went close to what Carl had predicted and feared. Caleb was sacked 68 times, third most by any quarterback ever. He often held the ball too long, failing to see open receivers. In mid-January, the Bears hired Detroit Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson as head coach, and Carl kept trying to remind himself of what he told his son countless times during the joy of his rise. You have to find a way to manufacture belief. Derek Stevens joins us next. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
We're back live from Circa's Galaxy Ballroom in Las Vegas. Here are your hosts, Layla Raheemy and Marshall Harris.
We are live from Las Vegas, as Russ mentioned, Circa Sports and the Galaxy Ballroom here at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. And we're getting you ready for Cubs baseball here on The Score as well. We know pregame gets you started at about 12:45 today. And Kyle Tucker, yes, is in the lineup. If you missed that conversation, go back and listen on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. We are happy to be joined now at Circa by the Circa Resort and Casino owner, Derek Stevens. The last time I saw you was at a really fun event over in Wrigleyville at Wrigleyville Dogs. You threw a party for everybody. But contest weekend is a bigger party than that by about a million. We're happy to be here.
Thanks a lot. I love coming to Chicago, and we had a great time at Wrigley. The Wrigleyville Dogs were terrific. The event was great, but the actual dogs were great. I loved it. I just loved it. But I would also tell you, yeah, thank you for coming to our home as well. This has turned into something really big, where we have football contest sign up weekend here out in Vegas, and my God, this Radio Rose turned into something. What do we have, like 35 or 40 different groups coming in over, like doing shows over the next 24 hours? So that's pretty cool. And everybody's signing up for Circa Million or Circa Survivor. I've heard a lot of theories and strategies and all that. So it's great.
So this has become kind of a thing. And when I say kind of a thing, I'm being completely underserving when I say that. But Derek, how big is it that you can create an event basically around the start of football season and all the wagering that takes place season long?
Yeah, you know, we thought about this a few years ago. Like, let's create this great opening weekend or contest sign-up weekend. So we do this on week zero of college before pro start, and then we're really kind of pushing our football contest. So Circa Million, Circa Survivor, Circa Grandissimo. But there's so many different events going on. So Mike Palm does an incredible football preview on Saturday. We've got a great day at Stadium Swim on Friday, and that's kind of when people have their own time to break off and meet up with their proxies to sign up. Today we've got a ton of different shows going on for people all over the country coming into Las Vegas, staying at Circa. Tonight we've got the opening cocktail party, which I'll see you at over at Bar Canada at the D. That'll be packed tonight. That'll be a lot of fun. And just before that, I get to participate in something that's pretty cool. I get to go to a champion's dinner. I got to wear a blue jacket, even though I didn't win it. I just invented it. So I get to have the jacket, you know, bring all the past champions in. So I think we're going to have like 60 people at champion's dinner tonight. So you'll see a lot of blue jackets roaming around tonight.
Yeah. And a lot of people who really know that there is a lot of strategy involved in this. I think that's that's one of my favorite parts about it. I giggle because I see the vignettes, you know, the YouTube documentaries that are created around this. But you've often had the famous laminated spreadsheet, too, that gives you the illustration, the mock-up of the schedule. You can buy it online. I know that that's something a lot of people are interested in. Tell me about, like, the strategy and the excitement that especially builds once the season moves on and progresses.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought up the documentary. You know, we filmed the 2023 season. We put a documentary out, and then when that came out last year, all of a sudden the interest level just skyrocketed. We just dropped the documentary from last season. It's on YouTube now, so it's a 10-episode docu-series called Circus Survivor, The Quest for $14.2 million. And it kind of goes through the sign-up process week by week. Last year, if you remember, week 1, 2, and 3, the largest point spread favorite went down each week, which was crazy, unprecedented, I think, in pro football history. And then it kind of followed the whole path of all the entrants until we got to 8 of them that went undefeated that split the $14.2 million. We're filming it again this year, so you'll see them filming tonight.
So another year, another documentary. Looking forward to seeing what that looks like, because every year, as you just said, is very different. Let's go to the Circus Survivor, because that's my thing. Every year I play Circus Survivor. Have never won. Excuse me, I play Survivor. I'm thinking about Circus Survivor. I get two of my friends to join in. We've got two guys. We're doing 200 each. That's the way. Pull it up and we'll vote on it every week. That's the idea. But how big has the Circus Survivor thing become? Because I know everybody feels like they could compete with anybody, and then this is, you know, going from a small pond to maybe the ocean.
Yeah, I think Circus Survivor, you know, when we started this a few years ago, I think we guaranteed a million bucks, and this thing's just taken off. Last year we guaranteed $10 million in Circus Survivor, and it just blew right through the guarantee. We ended up with $14.2 million, and we were just blown away. It impacted our thought process on this year, because this year we're guaranteeing $15 million, and we're pacing above that. So it's amazing. I think something about Circus Survivor that kind of hits home to everyone is there's a certain beautiful simplicity here. You pick one game each weekend with no point spread. Just pick one winner. It seems so easy, but obviously as the season goes on, it gets a little more difficult because you can only use a team once. So the number of teams that you can choose from, you know, dwindles as the season goes on. But it just seems so easy, but there's a tremendous amount of strategy as you get towards the end.
Well, and I like this part of it, too, that if a single person wins, they get it all. They're the true survivor. But if multiple people go 20-0, or if multiple people are eliminated the same week to reduce the contest to zero, then they split the pot. So it's fair. The way it's distributed, I think, is fair.
Yeah, I mean, if last year we had 8 entrants that made it through the first month of this carnage, but then they made it through the rest of the year. So 8 went undefeated, went 20-0. The reason it's 20-0 is because in Circus Survivor, we celebrate holidays. So we make Thanksgiving and Christmas week their own week. So 8 entrants went 20-0, and then they split the $14.2 million.
Well, I think you were ahead of the game there, because now I feel like the NFL is trying to make Thanksgiving Day its own week and the Black Friday holiday.
Yeah.
Take it over the world.
I think about what happened. We were all watching football on Christmas like a year and a half ago. Christmas was always effectively owned by the NBA, and then one year NFL comes in, and it was like, holy smokes, boom, it's over. We knew last year that the NFL wasn't going to walk away from Christmas after what happened 2 seasons ago, and now it's turned into this massive moneymaker. The Christmas games are effectively the most watched NFL games of the year because they're on internationally on Netflix. It's amazing what NFL's done, how many great moves.
Okay, so one of the things that are offered during this football contest weekend is you got an event tomorrow at Stadium Swim, and I'm really interested because I've never been to Stadium Swim. What advice would you give a first-time Stadium Swim goer?
Whoa, first time. Okay, I would tell you, you know, protect yourself at all times. Remember when Mills Lane used to say that?
yes, right. He looks at both of the guys and, yeah, let's fly.
So what I would tell you is you got to go into the game plan. You just can't go in without a game plan. You have to know what you're – like, if you're going to be in there for – like, let's say you're planning on going for 2 hours. That's okay. That'd be reasonable. If you're planning on going for 6 hours, you got to be real careful. Make sure you have sunscreen. Make sure you monitor how much – like, I don't know. Are you drinking beer out there? Are you drinking vodka lemonades? Or
I'm injured right now. No okay. alcohol because of the medication.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Well, that puts you in a much that puts you in a
much better situation.
You're in a unique situation then, because you know, people go in, they think, oh, it's not a big deal. I'm gonna have a couple of beers. Well, remember, at Stadium Swim, we're in a high temperature, low humidity environment, and I'm not sure of the exact science on this, but in my long history up there, you drink 1.9 times faster than normal. So these beers go down quicker. These vodka lemonades go down quicker. And all of a sudden, it hits you. So you got to be careful. You got to be careful. So I would say, yeah, protect yourself. A little sunscreen. Don't overdo the alcohol because it's going to hit you when you get out of there. But it's a great, great time. You're going to have a 143-foot screen. You're going to be able to watch every game possible. And you know, we've done so much with you talking about Stadium Swim in Chicago. You're going to probably run into a whole lot of people that you know hanging out there. This is like Chicago West over here.
We've okay. already seen three listeners that we are very happy to see. So yeah, we've definitely got some friends out there at the pool, and you meet a lot of people, which I think is a lot of fun too. Derek, thank you so much for coming on with us. It's a wonderful weekend. Football contest weekend. Your options are the Circa Millions, Circa Survivor, and if you're really cool, Circa Grandissimo.
You got deep pockets. Thanks so much, Derek.
Thank you. That was Derek Stevens, the owner and CEO of Circuit Resort and Casino here in Las Vegas, giving us the latest for football contest weekend. We have more coming up, some breaking news as well. So 5 on it is next. We'll try to give you everything we can as we get you ready for Cubs baseball here in Raheem and Harris on the Score.